This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's have some fun. Let's honor the fallen on a Memorial Day. From me, from you, from all of us, those who have fallen, thank you. Thank you. Any family member listening right now who gave somebody up for this country, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Let me tell you what we have on tap for tonight. Yes, it is me. Yes, we are here live. Yes, we do this every single year, Memorial Day. We do not take off. We do a three-hour show, no politics. You're going to have a lot of combat stories, a lot of names listed, a lot of history stuff. This is always a history-heavy day. I have a couple big history stories I'm going to tell you, one from the Civil War, one from as a naval battle from World War II. You have emailed in names of people you want honored. We're going to get to hopefully all these names. Some people even emailed in little stories. I'm going to try to get to these stories. I have Air Force Cross citations. There is so much to get to tonight. It's going to be history heavy, battle heavy. We are honoring the fallen here as we try to do. Just everything seems small, doesn't it? Doesn't everything seem too small, though? Look, it's something we feel strongly about. We try to honor the fallen as best we can. But what's enough? I mean, what's enough? But here's a conversation someone emailed in. I actually thought it'd be appropriate to open up the show. Listen to this and then just say, what can we do that's enough? Jesse, I was recently reminded of family's sacrifice when a service member falls. I was in a store that didn't have any customers in it. The cashier was a young man in his mid-20s. Neither of us were much for small talk. The exchange went something like this. Cashier, are you a vet? Me, yes. Do you have a vet discount? Cashier, yes. I have a fond place for vets. Me, thanks. Cashier, my dad was killed in Iraq when I was 2. Me, feeling as if I was gut punched. I'm sorry to hear that. The cashier said, I heard he was a good guy. The guy apparently follows it up. He said, you've made a significant sacrifice for our country. Thank you. Then I walked out of the store and cried a bit in my car. Guy's name is Rick, Marine. It hit him hard, obviously. Hits me hard. It probably hits you hard. That's what we forget, right? Cashier, mid-20s. He never knew his father. He'll never know him. I was giving my sons crap all weekend, laughing with them, joking with them, having a blast. Shoot, I took them swimming this weekend. I've had 15 years as a father, raising my oldest. My youngest is 13. That cashier never got to experience that because his dad gave his life for this country. The dad who gave his life for this country didn't ever get to rough up his boys in the pool on a weekend. That's what he gave up for you and for me, for this wonderful country. And that is why we feel so strongly about doing a Memorial Day show. So let's start our Memorial Day show, shall we? Let's do some history, shall we? I want you to imagine something. I want you to picture this. You have to go get in a fight. What kind of weapons are we dealing with here? Well, you have a weapon that's going to shoot one shot at a time. You also have a large bayonet you can attach to the end of this weapon. You and all your buddies, you line up shoulder to shoulder, and the enemy army is lined up shoulder to shoulder. And let's say you're 100 yards apart, all right? You're a football field away. They're on the other side of the football field. You're on the other side of the football field. Are you picturing this? Okay. You have your weapons. These are Civil War weapons. I'm sure you figure this out. Civil War weapons. They're over there. You're over here. All right? Now, that alone right there, if I told you that was the setup, you're on the football field, and you had to sit and shoot at them standing there in a line and they were going to be shooting back at you, you would already be a bit apprehensive, would you not? Especially by this point in time, we're not dealing with the kind of musket balls they were dealing with in the Revolutionary War. Yeah, we don't have machine guns at this point, but these weapons are getting a lot more accurate and certainly accurate 100 yards away. You'd probably be a touch nervous, wouldn't you, knowing they were shooting back? Maybe even knowing you were going to shoot them. Shoot! What if they charge? That's a big bayonet he's got there. I bet that wouldn't feel good. Pretty nervous right now, aren't you? Well, let me make it worse for you. Let me put a bunch of trees on the football field. Thick forest worth of trees. Oh, the men are still there. Where are they now? Well, I don't know. They're somewhere in the trees. And yes, they're still trying to kill you. You nervous yet? Oh, wait. Let me make it worse. Now that you're on the football field, but you can't see them anymore because it's a bunch of thick trees, allow me to bring in an industrial strength fog machine like you would see at a concert or something like that. And I'm going to pump in such dense fog that you can't see the trees which are hiding the men who are trying to kill you in the woods. Oh, you want me to make it even worse? I'm going to add something to the fog machine. It's basically poison for your lungs. If you start breathing it in, if you breathe too much of it in, you're going to die. It's going to make you cough. You nervous yet? And finally, to cap it off, I'm going to light the forest on fire. What I just described is what thousands of Americans died in the Battle of the Wilderness. It's known as the Battle of the Wilderness, and it might be the most horrific battle ever. And the two different battles we're going to go over today for Memorial Day, they both have a huge thing in common, and that they were both really turning points, or right about those turning points in the war. So let's set it up before we go back to the forest. We'll get back to the woods here in a little bit. Here's what's going on. First and foremost, this is the Civil War, obviously. And the Civil War, by the time the Battle of the Wilderness had kicked off, the Civil War had been going on for a couple years. And for the North, it had not been going well at all. So let me do the setup here. You know, I don't like to dump a bunch of names and crap on you because it ruins the story and it gets mind-numbing, but you got to understand this. Lincoln had a man in charge of his army called Meade. Meade was his name. And Meade was, Meade doesn't need any help from me to be destroyed by the history books, but Meade was a man, I'll put it as nicely as humanly possible. I don't know him because I don't know him, right? You don't know who's a victim of historical propaganda and who's not. He was a cautious type. Lincoln wanted this war fought. He wanted this war ended. Meade just wanted to train his men. Never take risks. Never go out, never train, never launch into this attack, or no grand strategy here. Meade simply wouldn't attack. He wouldn't engage. And it was driving Lincoln crazy. And the South by this point, well, let's go over what was going on in the South, because this is actually going to tie directly into the Japanese and how they were operating in World War II. Here was the deal with the South. And they knew this was their deal. Here's the deal. The South, they had to win, and they had to win early, or they were not going to win. They simply didn't have the logistics they needed to win. They didn't have the shipping. They didn't have it. They were going to starve to death. The South had to win and win early, but very similar to the Japanese, they did have what you'd call in boxing, we're going to do a couple boxing analogies here, they do have what you'd call a puncher's chance. Why? Well, they may not have the logistics and the food, and this is going to come into play for the Battle of the Wilderness. They didn't have the manpower, you know, the North is where all the population was. They may not have had what it took to last for a long fight, but daggone, can they throw a punch in round number one? They had just spent, by the time the Battle of the Wilderness rolled around,
they had spent 2 years kicking the crap out of the North virtually everywhere they went. The Southern generals were better. They were just naturally more aggressive. The Southern troops were better. They were more rural, more comfortable around firearms, sleeping in the ground. So the Union was taking just people fresh off the daggone boat and throwing a uniform on these poor saps, didn't even speak English. And they're all, go down south and kill some Confederates. So there was, for 2 years, it wasn't going well. And Lincoln had a situation on his hands. Let's discuss that situation next.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, on a Memorial Day, a sacred day. And just a heads up, as I tell the history stories and we do other things, I'm going to be reading names mostly every time we come back from break. These are names that you have sent in. I'm just going to kind of give name and either training accident or theater in which they die. These are people you want honored. William Burke, training accident. Private Edward Ellis, training accident. William H. Mixon, training accident. Walter Wolf, Korea. HM3 Winston, Glenn Barker, Vietnam. Mickey Lewis Wilson, Vietnam. Vietnam veterans poisoned by Agent Orange is just kind of one that it was suggested, and honestly, it's something that needs to be pointed out and honored. We dumped a bunch of orange crap in that jungle to get all the jungle out of it, and we ended up poisoning a lot of our guys, honoring them. Robert Scudder Porterfield, Specialist Greg Finley, West Germany. Private Don Brown, West Germany. PFC Roy Brown Jr., Operation Just Cause, that's Panama. Sergeant Mark Rademacher, Urgent Fury, that's Grenada. And we'll go over more here in a little bit. Let's go back to Lincoln. So Lincoln, we're leading up to the Battle of the Wilderness. In case you're just joining us, that's what we're doing. A little Civil War talk. Lincoln had a situation. He had 2 years where he'd just been beaten up by the South, and he had an election coming up. Now, obviously, he wanted to win re-election. That was at stake. And Lincoln also believed this. He believed if he lost the election, that whoever won the election in the North would have struck a peace deal with the South. And he probably wasn't wrong about that. If Lincoln loses this upcoming election, we very likely, as we speak right now, have two different countries. We do. I don't know whether the South would still have slaves or what. I don't know. But we very likely would have two different countries if Lincoln loses this election coming up. All right? Now, Lincoln simply cannot take this anymore. He cannot take it anymore. Meade won't move. He needs a win or he's going to lose the election. So he goes and finds this wonderful young officer who's been beating people up out west named Ulysses S. Grant. You may have heard of him from time to time. Ulysses S. Grant. By the way, quick side note, not that this is anything special at all. I'm related to him in some way. It's some kind of distant thing, third cousin's brother's dog type thing. But anyway, Ulysses S. Grant. No, we never met. Ulysses S. Grant. So he's now in charge of the North, and Lincoln says, go. You got to go fight. Now let's go down south. Robert E. Lee is somebody that people have a difficult time talking about today. I don't, but in this namby-pamby society we have now, everyone has to try to act like, oh, Robert E. Lee was an amazing human being. An amazing human being. He really, really was. Whether or not he was an amazing general, well, I'm going to show up when I get back from vacation next week, and I'll have about 10,000 emails telling me he was the best general ever, and I'll have 10,000 telling me he sucked, and all of you probably are going to make good points. All that stuff is fine. You can. Those are great history arguments to have. Whether or not he was a great general, I don't know. But you should understand this. The world at this point in time, 2 years into this war, the world thought Robert E. Lee was the bee's knees. They thought he was Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar all rolled up into one. Robert E. Lee was known worldwide and revered worldwide as this military strategic genius. His men
loved him. When you're, look, as I've always said, just quick side note, when it comes to officers, whoever they may be, lieutenants, flag officers, whoever they may be, the men are always right. If the men hate their officer, it's because he sucks. And if the men love him, it's because he's amazing. Robert E. Lee's men loved him. They loved him. So by now, he's basically become this unstoppable force in the minds of so many in the North, in the Union. You have this legendary general. He's known worldwide. He's beating us up. Oh, my gosh. So on. That's bad, right? It's bad. But he's not completely unbloodied because we are post-Gettysburg. We are post-Gettysburg, where the Confederates finally got their first bloody nose. But that's not enough, you see. Remember, Gettysburg was the South pushing into the North, doing an offensive operation into the North, trying to get them to back off, to stop the Northern invasion of the South. He lost. Now we're back to defensive. And that brings us to the Battle of the Wilderness. In case you're wondering where this is, Fredericksburg, Virginia is basically where it is. We're in Virginia. We're 60 miles or so outside of D.C. Now, here's what's going on. This is an insanely, as I tried to lay out in the beginning, a very, very thickly wooded area. And it's not just the trees, it's the underbrush. And it depending on where you're listening to the sound of my voice, you'll understand what underbrush can mean. I've lived all over, so I've been to places where sometimes just everything on the ground gets thick. The sticks and the fallen trees and the everything. And it's just, it's hard to move around. It's not trees just on flat ground. Everything is thick. And so here we have the wilderness. There are only two roads going through this wilderness. There has been a battle here before. That happens oftentimes in history. Happened all the time, World War I, World War II. There are key points that end up being places where people fight. Now, let's go to the woods, try to wrap up some of this Battle of the Wilderness stock, because we have so much to get to, but it might take me a few. Hang on.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day. Again, going to read off a few names of the fallen here before I get back to our little Civil War talk we're having at the moment. Major Christopher M. Cooper accident. This is all these names I'm about to read here died in a Guam flyover accident. Major Brent D. Williams, Captain Michael K. Dodson, First Lieutenant Joshua D. Shepard, First Lieutenant Robert D. Guerin, Colonel George Martin, Private Aloysius, World War II, Europe, Eldon Cohn, Battle of the Bulge, William McKinley Birch, Crossing the Rhine, World War II, Staff Sergeant Robert L. Ferris, turret gunner, shot down over France, World War II, Private Robert R. Garrett, World War II, Sergeant Braxton Poole, World War II, recommended for the Medal of Honor but not awarded, killed 53 of the enemy, knocked out 3 machine gun crews, all single-handedly, and was killed by mortar fire a day later. I will read more as the time goes on. Back to what we were talking about here. Okay, so Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, he has been charged with offensive operations. No more sitting around. Robert E. Lee's a little bit on his heels, lost at Gettysburg. You are now going to attack in the South. And so Grant is doing something, well, that every army, every general in the history of mankind has tried to do and wants to do. He's trying to flank Lee. And let me explain this. I know it's a dumbed down point, but people learn at different paces. And for some people, this is their first introduction to some of this stuff. What is flanking? What are people always talk about that flanking? Well, you want to attack in the front and you want to keep your enemy in front of you. This has not changed and it never will change. When there were swords and spears and shields, because your shield is in front of you and you're facing in front of you. You want your enemy to be in front of you. And where you don't want him, like if it was a Greek phalanx, like if you saw the Spartans or something like that, what you don't want to happen is for him to attack you from the sides or from the rear. That's called the flank. Those are your flanks. Anything not in front of you is your flank, okay? So when they say he's trying a flanking maneuver, he's flanking him. That means someone is moving around to someone's side or someone's rear trying to catch them off guard. That's what they say. That's what they mean when they say flanking. Grant is trying to flank Lee here. Lee's supply lines are fragile. Lee does not have as many men as Grant does. And Grant is trying to move to Lee's right and flank him. It's actually a pretty brilliant move. And Grant, he kind of figures if I move through these woods, through this thick underbrush, then he's not going to expect it. And he's certainly not going to meet us here because who would ever meet us here? Wars were not fought. Battles, especially in the Civil War, you know all the battlefields. You've at least seen pictures of them or seen the movies. They're not fought in the woods. They're fought in the fields or the roads or the railroad tracks. But because of the weapons and equipment and because of the artillery, remember we're dealing with cannons here, you would want to fight in the open. When artillery, when cannons are one of your main ways of killing the enemy, well, being in the woods doesn't do you any good because your cannonballs are going to be bouncing off the trees and killing your own men. You don't want to fight in the woods. You want to fight in the open. So Grant decides, I mean, I'm just going to flank him. I'll move my men right through the woods. And Lee says, no, you will not. Now, what happens when an army is trying to flank another army, but the other army catches on and they meet? Well, you know, it's not a meeting with accounting. You don't get to reschedule it. If you run into each other, wherever you happen to run into each other, that's where you're fighting. And that's part of what made the Battle of the Wilderness so horrible is they met in the... It is what made it so horrible. They met in the woods. They met in the dark. They met in the trees. And they began some two-day battle from hell. Now, I need to explain something because what are we focused on today? It's Memorial Day. Let's focus on the young men who are here. Both sides. So young. They're just so incredibly young. I was doing a little prep work for this yesterday, going over a couple of things, and they were on the southern side and the northern side. They were going over general this and general that. And I don't bore you with all these things because look, if you like details, go read a book on that stuff. It's good. There's a ton there. It's just not for me. But you know, General Longstreet here and this guy there and this guy there. And you know, these are the commanders. And they're so young. They're insanely young. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I might be off by a year or two, Ulysses S. Grant, the commander of the Union Army, is my age in this war. And when the Battle of the Wilderness kicks off, he's my age. The officers, generals, 32. 33. These are the high ups. These are the old men. Now, who are the others? Who are the privates? The PFCs? They're 17 years old. 18 years old. They're puppies. Most of these kids, I shouldn't say kids, they're men. Most of these men, they'd never left home. They'd never been 20 miles from home. You go sign up, and they all had different reasons. Everyone had a different story, right? Don't ever listen to some dumbed-down, simplistic version of history. Everyone on this side was fighting for this, and everyone on this side was fighting for that. Oh, shut up. Everyone had a different story. Maybe the family needed money. Maybe you didn't have a family. You were looking for some place to belong. Maybe you were looking for adventure. Wanted to toughen up, see what you're made of. Maybe you were all hot and bothered about slavery and you wanted to free the slaves. Maybe you loved slavery and you wanted to keep your slaves. Maybe, look, they were all over the place, their motivations, but they were all 17, 18 years old, scared to death, meeting in the woods with bayonets and rifles in their hands. Now, I'm not going to go over the this unit moved here and this unit moved there. Let's just go over kind of how it went from there, what it was like. We have to appreciate how horrific the medical care was back then. We are, and I don't want to say we're spoiled. That's not the right way to put that. But when we think about military medical care today, I will tell you, obviously, it's the military. You know, nothing's going to be wonderful. Nothing's going to be perfect. But I was so impressed with the medical care, like in the field medical care and the training our docs had in the field. Our docs were ready. If you got shot, blown up, if you were hurt, we were always training for how do we get this guy out of here. It's always part of your training. It wasn't just killing people. Okay, your buddy's down. He just had his leg blown off. How are you going to get him off the battlefield? Okay, you got to get him to this place. And then there's training of how to get him to a better place. And you know, you can picture World War II and these field hospitals they would set up. And okay, let's get him into this surgery. We've gotten better and better and better and better and better over the decades in medical care. Especially the early part of the Civil War, the stories are honestly, it's hell. It really is. I understand there are a lot of kids listening right now. So kids, make sure you check with your parents before you go looking stuff up on the internet, please. But you can go, look, you can go right now and look up pictures, real authentic pictures from the Civil War of the piles of feet. The feet the doctors had sawed off without anesthesia. And that's if the guys that were supposed to take you out of there even found you in time. In the very beginning of the war, half the medical personnel were band members they had going to grab wounded guys. They were drunk when they're walking around the battlefield. You did not want to get wounded in the Civil War. And so knowing that, I'll try to wrap up this story next. Hang on.
I've got an animal inside of me.
This is Jesse Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day. Trying to finish up this little Civil War story we're telling here. We have more names to read. I got a World War II naval battle coming next hour with some other things. I should also give you a heads up. Chris and I were trying to figure out how exactly we wanted to do this today as far as playing taps goes. We decided we're going to play taps at the end of every hour. Every hour will end with taps. How do you do this the right way? I don't know. We're doing it the best way we know how. How do we honor these men? Captain Daniel Leo Knotts, Senior Chief Petty Officer Thomas E. Higgins, washed off of a submarine deck. Petty Officer Second Michael J. Holtz, also washed off a submarine deck. Captain Travis Ford, Iraqi Freedom. Machinist Mate Joseph Ashley, training accident. Sub collision. Navy Chief Petty Officer Patrick L. Wade, Iraq, IED. First Lieutenant Weston Lee, Mosul, Iraq, IED. U.S. Army Captain Scott M. Shimp, training accident, helo crash. We'll get back to some more of those. Okay, so the Battle of the Wilderness kicks off. And these men start fighting each other. And they're in the woods. And the woods are so thick and the underbrush is so thick. And have you ever watched a video? You probably have seen it, or there have probably been movies who have depicted this at least somewhat. Have you ever seen somebody shoot an old muzzle loader before? It is wild how smoky it gets, because you're essentially just putting black powder. And I know, gun nuts, I know I'm making it simple. You're essentially just putting black powder in a barrel and lighting it on fire. That's all you're doing. You're creating an explosion, creating the combustion to force the round out of the barrel, right? That's all you're doing. There's so much smoke that comes with it. Well, this is dry underbrush in Northern Virginia. Everything starts to catch on fire.
The men are fighting each other in the thick woods, in the thick underbrush. The officers cannot see their own men. They can't see their flanks. They don't know whether they need to advance or stay. You can't see the enemy. You don't know where he is. You start shooting things, everything that moves. And what happened was the men begin on both sides. The men begin to go mad. One quote I read, they called them fiends. It turned normal Christian boys, I'm paraphrasing here, into fiends. What happens is when you're already in combat, your adrenaline's going through the roof, everything's going nuts, fire brings out something different in men. I've read stories in Vietnam of SOG guys, Green Berets, looking for NVA troops in some big bamboo field, and the field gets lit on fire, and all of a sudden they're running side by side with each other trying to get out. They're not even fighting each other anymore. That's what fire does. Fire, now everything is full of smoke. Everything's on fire. Men are now screaming. Men are burning. And remember what I said about the medical care. It already wasn't great getting these guys out. Now you've got wounded men who can't move, laying in the underbrush, watching as the flames come their way with no hope for anything in the world. It is horrific to think what that must have been like. And as you and me, we sit here on Memorial Day, and I sincerely hope you have enjoyed yourself today, enjoyed your family today. Trust me, the men who've fallen for this country would want that. There's nothing wrong with having a barbecue and some family time. Take a quick moment and remember them. But as we sit here, I mean, I'm sitting here in the air conditioning. I got a large cup of coffee sitting beside me. Chris and me just knocked out some breakfast tacos. Yes, we get those at night here. It's Texas. Anyway, men, 17, 18 years old on both sides, burned to death in the woods in Northern Virginia. That's how they lost their lives. It was so friggin' bad. The Confederates, as they were trying to retreat, the battle went on for 2 days. The Confederates ended up losing. It's a fascinating little conflict if you want to dig into the details of it. Essentially, the Union had enough troops to keep pouring men in, and Lee really didn't. The South was, they just didn't have the manpower. And after Lee loses this battle, which he does at the end of day two, he never gets to launch another offensive operation. From there, he's on the defensive the rest of the war. That's it. This was the turning point that really put the South on its heels. And from this, it was over. I mean, it was just a matter of time. Now, I don't want to say it was over. There were a lot of men who still had to die still. But from this point on, the South was not going to win the war unless, you know, Lincoln lost the election or something. But as the Confederates are running away, trying to get out of the woods, they're taking Union troops, and this happened on both sides, I should point out, and propping them up in front of the trees, using them as human shields to try to get the Union to stop shooting at them. And they didn't. So you may have been propped up in front of the tree and been shot by your buddy as he's aiming at the Confederates. That is the Battle of the Wilderness. And look, obviously it's horrible. I read it because it's horrible. We're going to move on to World War II stuff next hour, a naval battle, actually, Battle of Savo Island. But I read this because it's horrible, because it really hits me, especially on days like today. It hits me so hard that these men have gone through such horrible things and lost their lives so early so we can be free. And I'm so appreciative of it. You don't have to feel bad if you're one of the vets out there who lived and your buddies didn't. You need to let that go. You need to let it go. But man, today's the day to honor them. Philip Neal. First Lieutenant Philip Neal, KIA, Iraq. PFC Boyd Kimry, KIA, World War II. Dennis Van Buskirk, Vietnam. Harvey A. Fowler, World War II, Europe. Corporal Duncan Charles Crookston, Iraq. We'll get to more and some World War II stories next hour. For now, we're going to send you off this hour with Taps.
This is an iHeart podcast.